The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
Last year, right around now, former Cardinals executive Terry McDonough filed an arbitration claim against Michael Bidwell and the Arizona Cardinals for wrongful termination. His argument basically was he was fired in retaliation for complaints he made about the admitted use of burner phones to communicate with former general manager Steve Keim when Keim was suspended after pleading guilty to extreme DUI back in 2018. McDonough lost on the wrongful discharge claim. He won on the amendment to his claim that was added after the team issued a ridiculous, cartoonish, embarrassing, humiliating, bad look for everyone involved statement attacking Terry McDonough personally. Terry McDonough, Chris, won $3 million on Friday through the NFL's arbitration system directly for defamation of character in that statement that the Cardinals released to attack him personally for having the gall to try to enforce his rights that he believed existed against the Cardinals. And I lived this for years when I was practicing law. The playbook is always make the person who dares to sue the company look bad. But man, they went way too far, and they acknowledged in a statement issued last night they went too far with that statement. They're going to pay $3 million to Terry McDonough simply for that statement.
Right.
$600,000 for emotional distress, $150,000 for injury to his reputation, and $2.25 million in punitive damages for deliberately violating his rights by telling lies, yeah, things they knew or should have known were false in this initial statement authorized by Michael Bidwell. $3 million through the NFL's secret rigged kangaroo court.
Yeah.
It ain't all that rigged, right, because even this case couldn't be ignored for what they did to Terry McDonough.
Yeah, no, I hear you, though. I mean, it's cool that, yeah, the, you know, the rigged kangaroo court, as you call it, all that, that comes down on the NFL. You know, I get that. And, yeah, the Cardinals and, you know, Mr. Bidwell and everybody, they made their bet in this situation. So it's like, yeah, okay, whoa, it's cool. Wait, yeah, whoa, the rigged kangaroo court actually came down and you know, struck on, you know, a team in the NFL. It's rare, but it's also like, I mean, $3 million. I mean, again, if this happened in the real world, it's $30 million.
Well,
that's where it's still rigged.
That's where we're going next.
Beyond, like,
that's where we're going next.
I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. Right. Like, what? I mean, you ruined the guy's life. He'll never get a job in the NFL again, and $3 million is all he's going to get?
Well done.
Like, come on. Get out.
Well,
yeah,
done.
I've learned from you to look at the other side of things at times.
I wasn't intentionally testing you. I just was kind of allowing us to, you know, marinate in this idea that he got $3 million. But you're right. I call it a secret rigged kangaroo court because it is.
Yeah.
It's secret.
Right.
It's secret. I'm going to be writing something about that on PFT later today. Like, there's nothing that becomes available to anyone. And if you violate the confidentiality order that the arbitrator imposes, you get punished. And that happened to Terry McDonough. So in a normal case, the media has access to what's going on. And it's rigged because the NFL handpicks the person who's going to be the judge. This isn't an independent party. The commissioner decides who's going to handle the case.
Yeah.
And it's a kangaroo court because they do whatever they want. They make it up as they go. They come to whatever conclusion they want to make. If these facts had played out in front of a judge or a jury that had no connection to either side, you're right, add a zero, or maybe make it $60 million, or maybe make it $100 million. It would have been so much worse for Michael Bidwell. And that just tells you how bad it had to have been, how bad the facts must have been. And we saw the statement. That was my first reaction. This is unbecoming to the Arizona Cardinals and the National Football League to put this kind of crap out there, unrelated and irrelevant to anything Terry McDonough is complaining about, deliberately calculated to embarrass him, to attack him, and to paint him in a negative light. That's what the Arizona Cardinals did. And I won't be surprised, Chris. Two things. One, I think there's still the potential for litigation against the PR executive who fashioned this statement because he's not part of the NFL's secret rigged kangaroo court. He could still be sued by Terry McDonough. And I think at some level, the NFL has to impose some sort of discipline on Michael Bidwell because this all flows to him. And if the personal conduct policy means anything in the NFL as it relates to players, there's enough language in there that what he did to Terry McDonough should activate punishment of Michael Bidwell under the personal conduct policy.
Yeah, well, I'd be interested to see that. Maybe they think $3 million is enough punishment and they just go from there. I mean, would they do that? I don't know. I'm asking you speaking out loud.
Look at it this way.
Right.
Look at it this way.
Right.
If a player commits some act of violence against someone and has a civil judgment against him of $3 million, does that mean that the NFL shouldn't do anything about it?
That's very
true. I think if anything, it's more reason for the NFL to do something about it.
Right.
He did something that triggered a judgment of $3 million. That's how bad this was. And again, as we suggested, this would have been $60 million in a real court. $30 million minimum in a real court. So whatever he did resulted in a $3 million payment. They'll find a way.
There's no
Prove
way.
Prove me wrong, NFL.
They're not going to do
Prove
anything.
Prove me wrong. This is just like, we're not going to play football on Christmas. And I said, come on. Yeah, we you are who we think you are. And in this context, you will find a way to not do anything to Michael Bidwell. Well, he's already been punished. It was $2.25 million in punitive damage. He's already been punished. I guarantee you, if a player was in this setting, there would be hell to pay in the court of Roger Goodell.
I don't disagree with you there, but we've seen that there's two different sets of rules. As much as they want to say owners and everybody else should be just as accountable as players or more accountable, right? It's just not the case. We know that. That's the way it is. And, yeah, I don't expect to see anything more than what we saw yesterday, and that's it. And the league will just hope that you and I and everybody will forget about it, and they'll just keep going on with business and life.
Well, it's something that should not be forgotten because, look, first of all, he had a pretty good case for wrongful discharge.
Definitely.
Now, the arbitrator found against it, but, I mean, they're using burner phones.
It's actually crazy that the arbitrator found it not. Like, he thought that was a normal termination. That is another thing we didn't discuss. Like, that was kind of like, what? That's normal? There was no way that's normal. That was rigged kangaroo courtish right there.
Yeah. They dumped it all on Mike Dissner, who's now an executive with the Lions, and Michael Bidwell apparently acted like he didn't know anything about it. And again, without a jury to decide who's telling the truth and who isn't, I think the arbitrator just punted, like, I can't figure this out because one says up and one says down. Well, a jury would have to make an assessment of credibility here. And this is where, see, within the secret rigged kangaroo court, we don't have access to anything that transpires. If this spawns civil litigation against the PR executive or, you know, other potential claims that could be made beyond the purview of the NFL, transcript of the arbitration could become public record. Other facts that we don't know could become public, which will be potentially an even worse look for Michael Bidwell and the Arizona Cardinals. And, you know, Cardinals fans like to, and I get it, fans of a given team want to circle the wagons. How dare you attack our team? But if you've got an owner that's doing things that, you know, are creating these various reports and claims and $3 million here and other allegations, like, I mean, look at what happened in Washington. We still don't know what Josh Harris is going to be. But if there's enough there to come to a fair conclusion that this person shouldn't own an NFL team and needs to sell that team, the fans may be better off in the long run. Because, again, you can't fire your owner. You're stuck with the owner. The Cardinals have been stuck with someone named Bidwell, whether it's him or his father, for decades. And look at what they've gotten for it. Do we not think that the fact that the Cardinals are only randomly competitive and when it happens, it doesn't last for very long? Do we not think it traces to ownership, where there's been, you know, stories, countless stories about cheapness within the organization? So, you know, Cardinals fans are going to want to be inclined to protect the billionaire. Maybe there's certain billionaires that you shouldn't protect, because maybe you'll get a billionaire that will take better care of the team.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. It ain't been a strong 2 or 3 years for the Cardinals as far as that goes. And we know how fans are. They're, you know, sometimes this is where it drives us crazy, because we're like, yeah, why are you on the side of the billionaires? But I think it's more a bit of like a point you bring up all the time. It's more of like the loyalty to the helmet and the symbol and the emblem. And they look at the owner as part of that, so they don't want you to attack it or whatever else there. But, yeah, I mean, the Bidwells, the Cardinals, they've definitely taken a few on the chin here, you know, between the NFLPA reports and other things they've done over the last few years that hasn't looked great, right? And you know, listen, your point about, you know, their history and their results and how successful they are, of course it's fair to question the people at the top when it comes to that. I mean, as we know, any great thing, it starts at the top and then it goes down that way, right? So, so it's a bad look for the Cardinals. They did not handle this properly. They screwed over Terry McDonough. We know that. And, yeah, he got a little change, certainly got a good payday, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, the Cardinals and the NFL should be very happy that their kangaroo court only awarded $3 million.
And regardless of whether or not Michael Bidwell actually knew about the burner phones, it still happened. Like, is a team exempt from consequence for cheating this way simply because the owner didn't actively know about it? So I feel like there should be some sort of punishment of the Cardinals just simply because someone in an executive capacity was using burner phones to communicate with Steve Keim at a time when they weren't supposed to be talking to him. So this isn't the beginning of the end. This is the end of the beginning, because I think there's going to be more coming out of this in various contexts. Litigation, potential discipline of Bidwell, potential discipline of the Cardinals. This is the starting point, not the ending point. All right, we got to take a break because we're getting closer and closer to the ending point of the show. When we return, could a current NFL system for compensating players become a blueprint to help take better care of running backs? We'll discuss that next here on PFT Live.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
you feel at all like maybe the Eagles didn't appreciate how much you have left in the tank? Because
that can get you up on the shoulder, basically. Well, it wasn't about what he has left in the tank or anything like that. You know, it's a business, and sometimes hard decisions got to be made, even if you don't like them.
Hassan Reddick in his first media availability with the New York Jets, traded by the Eagles. We talked about that yesterday, and, you know, he gets it. Look. The players should think of it as a business because the teams do as well. And the sooner the players embrace that this really is not about loyalty, not about fandom, not about anything but what can you do for me and how much will I compensate you to do it,
That
makes it easier for the player to understand how he fits into this big football machine with a bunch of interchangeable parts, and the player is eventually going to be one of the parts that gets pulled out. And in this case, put in a different football machine.
Yeah, that's right. It's tough to swallow. I mean, I can speak from experience, you know, and especially when you're the caliber player Hassan Reddick is. I wasn't that. I know that. It hurts more. But, you know, like you discussed yesterday, I mean, he's been on a few teams here the last few years, so he's used to this side of the business dealing with it, right? We talked about the Eagles. They're already paying Josh Sweat. They're gonna have to pay Jordan Davis here soon. Jalen Carter's already in the conversation for the best defensive tackle in football. Like one of those guys where you go, wait, after year three, he's going to want to be paid like that, right? They got Nolan Smith, the other pass rusher. So they got an embarrassment of riches. They got to move on. And they went with a younger guy in Bryce Huff and paid him, you know, for the future a little bit, which, again, you can't fault a team for taking that approach. Let me go with the younger guy with a little less wear and tear on his body, right? So, you know, he gets that. And he's found a spot that we hit on yesterday that is perfect for him and should be able to catapult him into I want a new contract and pay him closer to something he thinks he deserves.
One way to get paid by an NFL team is through your contract, plus whatever clauses, incentives, escalators, etc. There's also something that's been around for years now, the NFL's performance-based pay system, which is aimed at taking care of players who were drafted low and play a lot. And there's a formula that applies to determine the extra money that a player gets from a separate pool that's created to just help balance out when you have a guy who came in under a slotted rookie contract, he's not making anything, he's playing a lot, let's take care of him because he's out there on the field wearing the uniform, carrying the flag, taking the reps, and having an impact. John Simpson of the Ravens led the way, all players with $974,000 in performance-based pay. Brock Purdy was in the top 25 at $739,000. His base salary was only $889,000 in the second year of his slotted rookie deal. And you'd think he'd be higher because he's the starting quarterback of a team that made it to the Super Bowl. But again, it's all a formula. It's based on years of service, draft status, playing time. And it's something that they negotiated in a way that fairly compensates guys over and above what they're getting. And it's all tied to, you know, the less you make and the more you play, the more you get.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It is a good thing. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we know that. I was a benefactor of that one year, my third year of my career. We went to the playoffs, and it was like, whoa, I'm going to get this check after the year, right? So, you know, it does. I mean, it protects the player to a degree, right? You'd like to see it, you know, maybe in more of a capacity in some things. And this is a guideline and a baseline thing of what we've discussed before as it pertains to running backs, right? Where I'd go, this is the thing I'd like to see adopted for the top end running backs in football, right? That to me is where it would make sense a little bit. I told you I had that conversation with Aaron Jones. One of the ideas I've had with that is, hey, after year one, if a running back hits a certain like benchmark or whatever, maybe he can become a free agent, right? Something like that. Or, you know, something along the lines of the running back contracts don't count quite as much against the salary cap. There's got to be something there that protects these guys, right? I look at it and go, wait, one of the best players with the ball in their hand last year was Kyren Williams of the Los Angeles Rams. He was arguably the best pure running back in football last year. I know McCaffrey had the best year, and he was on the 49ers, and he had the catches and all of that too. But, man, you could put Kyren Williams up there as far as people running between the tackles, the best runner in the game. He is very worthy of that conversation, right? 5 yards a carry. It's 12 touchdowns, right? He took a beating. He plays physical. A year of his life is gone because of it. I mean, a year of his career down the line is gone. And really, in the big scheme of things, making peanuts. Peanuts. As one of the best guys in football with the ball in his hand. And that is not right. And that's where the NFL needs to remedy this situation, because by the time the way the NFL has it set up in the kangaroo court of bullcrap agreements with the contracts and franchise and all that, I know the players voted for it too. I get it. But they never see free enterprise like we talk about. And that's where I'd love to see the running backs get helped a little bit.
I need to rewind a few minutes. You said a lot there, but I do need to say something.
Yes.
I do need to say something, because right. I'm going to get the emails. It's beneficiary, not benefactor.
Okay.
The benefactor is the one who pays the money. The beneficiary is the one who gets it. And I just need to say that. Ordinarily would let it go. The statute of limitations on that would have run, but I don't want 20 more emails telling me that you said benefactor when you should have said beneficiary. At least you got the first 5 letters.
Yeah, come on.
Right.
Yeah.
B-E-N-E-F.
I was close.
Look. The other ideas, and I like creative thought when it comes to this. None of this is going to work.
I know.
A quicker path to free agency isn't going to work. Because it's all part of the system that covers all players. The one thing, and when you talked about Aaron Jones yesterday, it's like, yeah, we did have some good ideas last year. What were they? And I forgot about it. And then when I saw that they announced the performance-based pay, that's like, yes, that's what we're talking about. Have a separate fund that pays guys who play running back based on yards,
right.
touchdowns,
right.
catches, etc. cetera.
Right.
Because that enhances the game. To the extent that fantasy football has become a big part of this and people watch because of their fantasy teams, not because of their favorite teams, that has added to the allure. That's how these guys become popular. It adds value to the overall sport. And, you know, Chris, the easier thing to do, the path of least resistance would be to just reconfigure and renegotiate the formula for performance-based pay so the running backs get compensated that way.
Yeah.
That it's not just playing time,
yeah, right.
but the formula takes into account yardage and touchdowns. And, yeah, the offensive linemen are going to be like, what about us? We don't have stats. But that's the way to do it, because it's less conspicuous that way. And then one of these years, we're going to get the performance-based pay numbers, and we're going to see it's Kyren Williams getting $1.5 million on top of what he already made.
It should be.
I think that's the only way to do it that will work, because the other ways infringe upon the rights of the players at the other positions, which yeah. I've said time and again.
Right.
Every position should have its own bargaining unit, because what helps a running back hurts somebody else. What helps a quarterback hurts somebody else.
Yeah, I'd like to see something like you said. That has been something I've said for a long, long time, right? And especially if that player's not a first-round pick, right? That maybe changes things. I mean, again, if it's a running back that's a top 10, top 15 pick, I don't know. But there's definitely a part of me, again, that has more of the soft
the soft
spot in my heart for the guy that's drafted in the 5th or 6th round who's making the league minimum, right? And, you know, I know, like you're saying, like, hey, the O-line's going to sit there and go, hey, what about us? But the point is, the O-line, right, most good offensive linemen see a 2nd and 3rd contract. And we're not seeing that at running back. So I wish they could find something along the lines of what you're talking about that's maybe even more aggressive. Like, hey, Kyren Williams, he was no doubt one of the 5 best running backs in football last year. He should be paid something in the range of the top 10 running backs in football for the year. Something like that. Again, I just, you know, I think on a human side of things, it is wrong what we're doing to these guys right now. I really do. It's as we've talked about so much, it's the freakiest guys on a football team, and everybody knows it, and they're getting paid and you know, crushed in that department worse than anybody on the squad.
And they take the biggest pounding physically of pretty much anyone on a football field.
Right.
And their careers often end before they even get a chance to get that second contract.
I mean.
All right, let's take a break. Chris will tell us his thoughts on the cornerbacks in the draft, which is only 23 days away. We'll do that next here on PFT Live.
What's tough about watching a lot of these guys is as I turn on the film, the first thing I said is, all right, did you play LSU? Did you play Ohio State? Did you play against those guys?
Right.
And I would turn on, like, I turn on Alabama, and I think both of their corners are really good football players. And they play LSU, and I'm like, they barely cover Neighbors. I want to see this matchup. And college football is so interesting to me because you put your top corner in the boundary because of speed and all of that, and the ball barely goes to the boundary.
There's Devin McCourty when he wasn't offending us on camera, helping Chris
right.
with his assessments of defensive backs in advance of the 2024 draft. Once upon a time, McCourty was a first-round pick of the New England Patriots. He played corner and safety.
Yeah, he was drafted as a corner. Both. He was drafted as a first-round corner. Yeah, that's what he was there to do. And, you know, they were not in love with his total package as far as a coverage skills guy. And they realized, damn, he tackles and he's smart and he's made to play safety. And, of course, he had, you know, one of the best careers we've seen here in recent history at that position.
All right, so coming into this year's draft, we've got the names. Chris has watched the film. And give us your thoughts on who's the best of the best corners entering the draft this year.
Well, I mean, again, the great corners of all time have all one thing in common. They're extremely explosive. They're elite athletes, right? I mean, that's what it is. You go to, like, Champ Bailey, Darrell Revis, Deion Sanders, Darryl Green, right? You go through the list, Jair Alexander right now, whoever you want to talk about. This isn't like, oh, they're smart and they just know how to play the game. It starts with pure physical explosion, eliteness, speed, all of that. Quinyon Mitchell has everything, right? I mean, when you want an island shut down man-to-man corner, he's, to me, is the best in the business. Now, the reason he'll be doubted a little bit is the reasons you heard Devin McCourty talk about it a little bit. He played at Toledo. He never really got to match up against the top receivers in college football, so you don't see it, right? You know, and listen, there's evaluators out there that, yeah, sometimes they're not comfortable with that, right? They want to see. And, like, McCourty, like Nate Wiggins from Clemson, is his number one just because, again, he thought, hey, I saw him play against North Carolina. I saw him play against this team with top receivers. So I got a feel for that a little bit. And I understand that. But, man, Quinyon Mitchell, in my opinion, is, like, really – we're talking special. It's Devin Witherspoon-ish from last year, except we're talking about somebody that I think is bigger and has more pure straight speed than Devin Witherspoon, Mike. And you know I had a man crush on him last year, and I brought you into man crushville as well. It's that type of guy we're talking about here. I mean, size, length, got some thickness. He's aggressive as hell. It might not be hitting like Devin Witherspoon, but he's around and kamikaze just like it. And his ball skills are incredible. You know, playing the ball, knocking it down, the ability to intercept the ball. I think Quinyon Mitchell is really special, Mike.
Witherspoon was the fifth overall pick last year, taken by the Seattle Seahawks. Where do you think the window opens on Mitchell this year?
So, like, I haven't got done with D tackles yet, right? But Quinyon Mitchell is in the running for the best defensive player in the draft. From what I've seen to this point, I think if Quinyon Mitchell, right, had an Ohio State helmet when he was playing or a Michigan, we'd be going, oh, he's a top five pick. But the Toledo thing is going to bother some people, right? Or if he was, you know, got a few games like a Sauce Gardner who was as in Cincinnati, but we got to see him against Alabama and a few others that would have made evaluators warm and cozy. He doesn't have that. But again, when you talk about fast, explosion, putting your foot in the ground, driving on the ball, all that, Mike, it's as good as any corner we've seen come out in the draft, like in the last few years. It's that type of guy. I'm really excited for the guy. And he's got a chance to be, you know, one of those guys that's my favorite defensive players. I think he's got that type of talent.
We talk about the CYA factor from time to time, and that's an area where you could see a guy drop a little bit, because if you use a top five pick on him and he doesn't work out, you got the owner in your office saying, why did you think this guy from Toledo was going to be able to compete at the NFL level? He didn't compete against SEC teams. He didn't compete against Big Ten teams. You're projecting this guy to be a top five pick based upon the MAC? Are you kidding me? If he doesn't work out, if he works out, everything's fine. But that's what causes a lot of these picks to go where they do, guys to slide, because you don't want to have that awkward conversation with the boss if the guy just doesn't work out.
Yeah, I think there's a part of that, definitely. You know, and again, hey, you know, evaluating a guy and the talent he plays against and who that is, hey, that's certainly a part of the equation, right? We know that. But, again, that's one where you got to be careful, too, and you got to trust your eyes at times, too, and what you see, right? I mean, I know Khalil Mack, he didn't play any great left tackles when he was playing up there in Buffalo, but, I mean, I turned on the film and I was like, damn, muscles everywhere, explosive as hell. I know these aren't, like, big-time Alabama tackles, but he's still throwing them around with one hand and, like, doing it easy, right? So those are the things you got to kind of piece together through this. He did play Ohio State 2 years ago and looked every bit in the class, and you didn't have to worry about him anybody out there in the receiver. So that people will go back to that, and I would say to that even like, hey, he's better now than he was then. But yeah, I would be shocked if he's still on the board past 12 or 13. I mean, I think he's that type of football player.
You can see Chris's full breakdown of his rankings of the cornerbacks along with an appearance from Devin McCourty at Chris Sims Unbuttoned, available on the NFL on NBC YouTube channel. We're going to take a break. When we return, sad news yesterday from a former first-round pick in the Miami Dolphins who played for a couple of other teams, Vontae Davis. We'll discuss that next here on PFT Live. News emerged yesterday that Vontae Davis, first-round pick of the Dolphins in 2009, was found dead at his grandmother's home in Florida. The news was later confirmed by the various teams he played for. He was traded to the Colts. And I remember that vividly, the moment when he found out in Jeff Ireland's office in Miami that they were trading him, and he was shell-shocked by it. And that was kind of the first time I thought, Chris, should we really have cameras and microphones in here when guys are finding out these life-changing things from their teams? They're getting passed around from one to the other. He played for the Colts for several years. Retired from the Buffalo Bills. Remember, he retired at halftime of a game.
Yeah.
You and I found our video yesterday of us talking about it. I mean, it's like, you know, if the guy's not in the frame of mind to play, he's not in the frame of mind to play.
Right.
He walked away when he walked away on his own terms. Not many guys get to walk away on their own terms, regardless of when they walk away. Younger brother of Vernon Davis and a stunner, just one of those, 35 years old. As you and I get older and older, 35 seems younger and younger.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's too early. It really is. You know, I never got the chance to meet Vontae Davis, but, I mean, I had so much respect for him as a player. He's one of those players, again, Mike, that we just talk about all the time that kind of slips through the cracks where, you know, he didn't make it to the Hall of Fame and he wasn't a superstar and we forget about it. And, you have a day like yesterday and you think back about his career and you go, damn, I mean, Vontae Davis was really good. I mean, Vontae Davis went through some years there where, yeah, he didn't get in the Hall of Fame, but he was in the conversation for one of the best corners in football, that true island man-to-man type of guy, right? And, yeah, maybe gets forgotten about a little bit about his ability and what he did on the football field. He was damn special that way, and sorry to see him go. Thoughts and prayers to his family for sure.
Pro Bowler in 2014 and in 2015 with the Indianapolis Colts. And yes, we extend our condolences.
2014.
His family, his friends,
right?
His teammates.
I saw something online yesterday where they were claiming in 2014, like really his year that year by grading websites was one of the greatest, like if not the greatest year of a corner ever since, you know, a lot of the PFFs and those type of things have come into the world, right? So that speaks to something, you know, just right there.
It is a reminder, and we talk about this from time to time, guys who played well, were stars in their day, and then they're gone, and there's somebody else that takes their place, and we just keep on going. And it's easy to forget. You can sit down and think of the names of guys who were great players. That's got to be tough for guys that were in that kind of a spotlight at such a young age, and then they have the rest of their life after that. It's a heck of an adjustment to get to the point. Not long after, in the grand scheme of things, you stop playing, that people have even forgotten that you ever did. We're going to take a break. We'll have more PFT Live right after this. Oh, they're working out in the offseason already. Two new teammates in Philadelphia, Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley. Revenge tour time for Saquon Barkley. Gets to play the Giants twice this year. Your New York Giants, Chris. They're going down to the Eagles twice because here comes Saquon playing like he's never played before. So It's time to draft the best revenge games this season, inspired by Caitlin Clark in Iowa getting revenge on LSU, even though I don't think it really counts as revenge. We're going to go with revenge anyway. Best revenge games for 2024.
Well, there's some good ones out there, right? There definitely is. I mean, the one that came to my mind right off the bat, and I don't even know if it was like totally revenge here, but it's revenge because they're both psychos and there's revenge about something, is the Harbaugh Bowl this year. The Harbaughs. I mean, the Ravens going to the Chargers, right? Or do I have that opposite? Yeah, the Ravens going to the Chargers, going to play there. Of course, hey, it's going to be Jim wanting to get revenge for the Super Bowl loss. It's going to be Jim wanting to establish, hey, I'm back in the league, John, brother. I'm kind of good over here, too. It's going to be John going, hey, we're the Ravens. Screw you. Don't infringe on my territory. We're still one of the best teams in the AFC. So that's one that, you know, came about right in my brain. I mean, it's revenge for something. Revenge for a noogie that John gave Jim at 9 years old. Who knows what it is?
Well, and if the schedule makers really want to have a little poetry or symmetry in this, some type of tree, they first met on a Thanksgiving night in 2011. And that was actually the game that spawned NFL Network giving up that game and sending it to NBC to give it a bigger platform and a bigger audience, because the Thanksgiving night game became a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
It was 49ers at Ravens. So Ravens at Chargers, that would be fair. That would be a great Thanksgiving night game. I got to go Russell Wilson at the Broncos. And Pete expected me to take Kirk Cousins.
Well, of course we did. Every draft we do is Steelers and Vikings. So, yes. And, of course, you got the Steelers. Yeah, of course. We know.
This is Steelers.
Yes, thank you.
Well, because think of how things went for Russell Wilson in Denver. Think about last year. Regardless of who's right or who's wrong, Russell Wilson clearly believes he got mistreated. He clearly believes that the team made an improper request of him to alter his contract under threat of being benched. And the word extortion has been thrown around. Remember when your former teammate Brandon Marshall was doing that interview where he was fawning all over Russell Wilson? He even said extortion. Like, at some level, under that facade of nice guy, Russell Wilson has a fire burning. He wants to stick it to Sean Payton. He wants to stick it to the Denver Broncos, and he gets to go back to Denver to do it this year as the quarterback of the Steelers, assuming he's the starter when the time comes.
Yeah, hey, listen, that's definitely up there. We know that. And that is like, you know, it's real revenge there. It's revenge in the Wilson house, all right? They're disagreeing with your assessment on revenge today. That's real revenge. That constitutes a real, like...
Somebody did poop in the dishwasher.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly right. Like, that really did happen almost, basically, in a literal or a figurative way in Denver. Thank you. I got there. I don't know if I can spell it, Pete. I'm not sure. All right, next one. I'm just going to go...
R-E-V-E-N-G-E.
Yes, I'm going to go to just basic revenge here, okay? And this is with my buddy, right, Shanahan, the 49ers, the Chiefs. They get another crack at them this year. That's again. And this goes beyond, like, wait, we've lost two Super Bowls to the Kansas City Chiefs in heartbreaking fashion, right, where we were kind of controlling the game in both games for really the better part of three quarters. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. So there's revenge there, let alone Shanahan hasn't beat Andy Reid at all as a head coach yet. I believe Andy Reid's like 5-0 against Shanahan, or 4-0 or something like that. It's close to that, right? So, you know, that's getting personal, and it is real revenge there. So that'll be a testy game for sure because of both of those teams next year.
I got to go Aaron Jones against the Packers. Again, I'm resisting Kirk Cousins and the Vikings simply because there isn't animosity there. There clearly is animosity between Jones and the Packers. He's talking about what a bright future the team has. Next thing you know, he's gone. Matt LaFleur, the head coach of the team, apparently said recently that he was caught off guard by the Josh Jacobs, Aaron Jones swap, which seems kind of odd that the head coach would be caught off guard. If he's caught off guard, clearly Aaron Jones is caught off guard. So I think he's feeling closer to the Russell Wilson mindset than just, I'm just doing my job, like I think Kirk Cousins will feel.
Yeah, I would hear that, definitely. That would be, Yes, he's going to, gosh, in the division. They got, and it's even more, like, they got rid of me and brought in another running back, right? And no, that's not exactly like it's like the youngest guy in the world. It's Josh Jacobs, year six of his career. So that's got to irk him a little bit. There's no doubt about it. I think revenge would be a real thing there. All right, we're going to a break, Pete says. Okay, so I'll
break.
Make my last
we're going
pick
to a
after.
Break. Good. Round three when we return.
Will you pick a Steeler or a Viking?
All right, there are the picks so far of the games that will be revenge for literally or figuratively defecating in a dishwasher. Here's Chris's third pick.
You're disgusting.
Go ahead, make your pick.
You're a child. You're a child. You're a 58-year-old
child. I know, that's
child.
Fine. That's fine.
There's some
I'd rather
good
be a 58-year-old child than an 8-year-old old man.
Yeah, okay, that's good. You're right. You don't want to do that. There's some good ones out there, you know? I mean, it's Devin White. That's going to be personal when he plays the Bucks, right? I mean, Patrick Queen and the Ravens. I'll leave the Viking stuff to you since you can only do that in the draft. So I'll leave that. I know where you're going next, so I'm not going to steal it. I know. I guarantee it. All right? But I'm going to go with Saquon against the Giants. Of course, that you know, to your point a minute ago, that's real revenge. The Giants never paid him a long-term contract. He was the number two pick of the draft. He was really awesome in a lot of ways without a very great supportive, you know, cast around him, supporting cast. So I would think there's going to be extra incentive, especially being that division rival like you were just talking about with Aaron Jones, that he's going to want to, you know, shove it up the spot you keep talking about with the Giants.
The pick for me is not Kirk Cousins returning to Minnesota, which will happen this year. I've already got Paul Allen
better one.
Working
there's
on
better.
Me to go to the game. The better one is
yes.
Whenever it happens, Cowboys at Falcons, Mike Zimmer, former Vikings coach, coordinating the Dallas defense, Kirk Cousins the quarterback, a lot of tension between them.
Who do you think Mike Zimmer would rather beat the crap out of? Kirk Cousins or you? Who do you think he'd rather beat the crap out of?
He'd want to beat the crap out of me with Kirk Cousins' helmet.
That's right. You hear that, Mike? If you need any help, just call me. I'll beat the crap out of them with you. I'll join in. Let's do it.
Do anyway. Without any desire for revenge.
That's
just
right.
Get the dishwasher
just going to beat up an
I
old
visit.
Man. That's
all
what
I
need
to
say.
Do. See you tomorrow.
See ya.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.